Welcome back, book nerds, to today's episode of the podcast. I will be speaking with Toby, John, and Zelda, the filmmakers behind The Deeper You Dig. Ivy and Echo are not your typical mother-daughter team. Ivy, once an intuitive psychic, makes an easy buck as a bogus tarot card reader. 14-year-old Echo likes old-timey music, hunting, and black lipstick. When reclusive Kurt moves down the road to restore an abandoned farmhouse, an accident leads to Echo's murder, and suddenly three lives collide in mysterious and wicked ways. Kurt assumes he can hide his secret under the ground. But Echo burrows into his head until he can feel her in his bones. As she haunts his every move trying to reach her mother from beyond, Ivy must dig deep to see the signs and prove that love won't stay buried. Hi there, book nerds. Welcome to today's episode of the podcast. Joining us today, we have the filmmakers of The Deeper You Dig. Thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Happy to be here.
Yeah.
So for our listeners and our viewers, can you please introduce yourselves?
My name is Toby Poser, and I play Ivy in the film.
My name is Zelda Adams. I'm their daughter. I play Echo in the film.
I'm John Adams, and I play Kurt.
Perfect. I love how you guys as a family were able to create such an amazing short film. And I thought I was really impressed with the film, and I'm so excited to talk to you guys about it.
Thanks for having us. We love making it, and it's really fun that we're getting to do things like this.
Can you please introduce the film and maybe talk a little bit about it?
Sure. So The Deeper You Dig is about a mother and daughter who live in a quiet town, and a strange man moves next door or down the road to restore a house, and the three lives collide in tragic ways. And it's all about guilt, burying guilt, that would burying love that cannot stay buried, how people refine each other. And there's a little bit of gore and supernatural and tarot and spooky stuff thrown in.
Yeah, it's about nothing can be buried. And the deeper you dig and the more you push things down, the more they come up. And so it's about guilt, it's about sadness, and it's about revenge.
So what was the inspiration behind the film?
We really wanted to flip the ghost story on itself. Many times in films, I feel like the ghost is the bad guy. So we kind of wanted to flip that on itself and make the ghost the good guy, I think.
Yeah, I'm with Zelda on that. I think that was a really fun aspect of the movie.
No, definitely. I just finished The Haunting of Bly Manor, and I noticed some of the tropes in your film as well, and I love those tropes. So I'm really glad you guys were able to play around with that. For the tarot, do you practice it, or what was the inspiration behind using tarot?
We don't practice it, but we learned a lot about it from a woman named Sasha Graham, who is a world-renowned tarot expert and now a dear friend of ours. And so she introduced us to that world, and we realized it could be a great device for showing what's going on with these three people, because the cards have so many wonderful images that you can tilt to your purposes. And they're also just creepy looking and wonderful. And yeah, we had a lot of fun with the tarot.
Yeah, definitely. They look beautiful, but at the same time, they have this haunting aura to them. It's really fascinating.
Yeah.
What are some of your favorite aspects of creating a horror film?
I think that with horror, artists have a lot of artistic freedom, and we definitely love that. There are no limits. You can do whatever you want. And just playing with blood is very fun.
How much blood did you guys use?
We used a lot of blood, actually. I mean, we used a lot of real gore, and we used a lot of fake gore. One of the things we found out making the movie, that when you pour blood all over yourself and you're out in the freezing cold, that stuff turns to ice really fast, and you can freeze your fingers off or whatever has blood all over it. And it was kind of, we should have known that, but when you're covered in blood and you're out in the winter, you can get real cold real fast.
No, definitely. I
I honestly wouldn't have thought about that either. It's just like, it'll be fine. And then once you're in the situation, you're just like, wait, it's not fine.
Yeah. We had one really tough day where we had, and it was learned that we were shooting and there was no turning back and there was no place to get warm. And it, I mean, two of us literally just at the end of shooting, just couldn't feel our hands. And, you know, it was even hard just to stop the camera because you couldn't feel whether you were hitting the button.
Oh no. I can only imagine. I get cold very easily because it's always hot here in California. So yeah, I don't know if I would have been able to survive filming with you guys.
Except one day we shot on a frozen lake and that wasn't cold enough. As you walked on the lake, you could hear it groan and kind of, and I was scared to death that day.
Oh no.
But it looked good.
I think I know what day you guys filmed. Is it for when the mom is on the bridge? Was that the frozen lake day?
No, actually the frozen lake day is where it's just at the end of the movie where we're going hunting. And oh, okay. There's a couple shots where I'm kind of following her and it's a little creepy and she kind of is looking back at me. And we set the camera up on a bicycle so that it kind of looked like a steady cam. But the thing was the weight that day, it was actually springtime. It was the last snow. And so we had to get that shot. But as we were walking on that lake, it literally was cracking the whole time. And it was pretty creepy. Could have been a whole different ending.
No, definitely. I really like how you said you used a bicycle as a tool to make it look like it was a steady cam. What other like tips and tricks do you have for aspiring filmmakers that are maybe short on equipment?
Hey, that's a great question. We can each answer that because we only have, when we shot the Deep Dig, the only equipment was a tripod and a camera. And we used a lot of tricks. Like for example, there was another shot that we wanted to have where you follow Toby's character on an old fall road and she throws something away that's kind of important. It's a symbolic event right there. And we found that the best way to do a steady cam there was to, I drove a Prius backwards with the camera set up on some pillows. And the thing about a Prius is it doesn't have an engine. It runs on a battery. So it's super smooth. And it's one of the most artistic shots of the movie. And it's due to that Prius. So basically, the way we work it is we know what we want and we try to get it over and over and over. And in this case, I think we shot that a bunch of times and it finally worked when we figured out do the Prius in reverse with pillows and cameras. And, you know, you do whatever it takes is the answer, don't you think? Z's big on cinematography.
Yeah, just take advantage of what you have. And if you have a car, you can definitely use that and just ride on it. You said it best.
We've even used skateboards in the past where we would just put the camera on a skateboard and kind of bend down and move those wheels.
Another thing that we did to get some cool cinematography with this movie was shoot from a ladder, a painter's ladder. We had a really tall ladder. So a bunch of shots are done way up in the trees where we climbed up this ladder just to get, and it adds a kind of creepy effect, like something's looking down at this horror. So, you know, it's like that, Alfred Hitchcock kind of move.
No, yeah, definitely. Thank you guys so much for sharing that. I'm personally a student filmmaker, so it's really interesting to see how others are, you know, creating these films with a limited amount of equipment. So thank you for sharing your tips and tricks. Is there a moment in the film that really sticks out to you? Like, do you have a favorite part, whether it be because of a shot, the energy you had while you filmed it?
And what do you think, Toby?
Well, everything inside the house is special because John was actually renovating that house. So to watch him knock it down to its skeletal form, which looks so beautiful and creepy, and to think of it now, which is beautifully renovated and there are people living inside it. So, well, it'll be amazing to always look back on this film and see where that house started. And as we were shooting, the house became a real metaphor for what was happening to the characters in the film. As the house started out skeletal and cold, it grows skin. And as Zelda's try to emerge from the dead and meets your mom, and Kurt's character is going through certain changes. I don't want to spoil too much. The house begins to grow skin as John's putting up walls, and so everything in the house is pretty special to me.
My favorite scene is Toby acting with herself, actually, where she's a clown and a tarot card reader. And I just think, like, I love it because it's incredibly sad. Like, everyone's scared of, not everyone, but a lot of people are scared of clowns. And so we had a lot of fun with that clown makeup and dressing up that clown. And it did look super creepy. But I think what's fun about that scene is how unbelievably sad that clown is. And it's, and so the horror there for me is the sadness of that clown. And I think Toby just, like, it's such a well performed scene. I love that one.
I totally agree with that one too, but I also really like it because of the makeup for the clown. I thought it was super well done. You did the makeup, right?
Yeah.
And I just thought it was amazing, and I love looking at that clown character.
Yeah, the makeup had me just staring at it. I was just like, how did they do that? Like, it was like very uneasy, but it's also like you want to go comfort it.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah. Oh, I'm stuck between two places and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, that's great that you say that. I'm very happy you say that, because I mean, that's what the whole movie is about kind of, you feel for every character, but you also kind of don't like every character. Well, except for Z's character is lovable, but you know, that's what's fun about, I think fun about any movie is when you love people and you hate them. That's what's, to me, cool. So hopefully we achieve that.
Oh, definitely. And I have two questions. The first one about the house. Were you renovating it already and then you decided to make the film, or was it just something that happened coincidentally?
Yeah, that is a great question. And the answer is that house, as I was tearing it apart, we had a lot of movie ideas. Like, we're a family. So we drive around, we go to soccer practice, we're having dinner together, we do a lot of things together. We're always talking about, well, movie ideas and what could we do. And so we had a bunch of ideas that we were banging around. And as I tore that house apart and I saw it, how beautiful or stark and kind of crazy it looked, I said, hey, you guys, we should make, you know, this movie that we've been talking about that has this subject. And so, yeah, I think the house and the way the house looked inspired us to get moving.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because as I was watching, I was just like, how did they find a house that they can just like rip apart? Like, that's insane.
Yeah, it was very lucky. And it's such a wonderful character. That house is an amazingly beautiful character.
No, definitely it is. And for the makeup, I was really impressed with the makeup as well. Did you all split it between yourselves to do certain looks, or how did that work?
Yeah, I think that we all kind of do our own makeup, but a lot of stuff is actually done by our special effects guy, Trey Lindsay. And I would say he does the most of, you know, the stuff in the editing process.
Yeah, so if we don't feel that we can do anything organically, we hand it off to Trey, and he does it, both a mix of organic and digital. And he's a wonderful artist. Like, he's just an amazing artist, and he's just so fun to work with because he says yes. Mm-hmm. He never says no.
Like, for Zelda's character, Echo, there's like a shot where there's something going on with her face. Was that practical, or was it visual effects?
That was visual effects. Trey did that, and he did an amazing job with that.
Yeah, so that face is actually his daughter. It's half of Zelda's face and then half of his daughter's face with makeup on it. So that's how he did that.
Oh, okay.
I mean, he would explain it better, but that's basically what he did, is he made his daughter up all brutalized.
That's and then he interesting.
Put the two faces together. And, yep. Really, I love it.
Yeah, because that shot came up and I was just like, oh my gosh, like, how did they do that? Like, yeah. I was so shocked, and I was just like, wait, can they go back to her? I want to see more of it, you know?
Well, we'll tell him you said that, because he works really hard and he's a great person.
No, please do. His hard work definitely paid off.
Cool.
And there's a moment in the film where there's the deer running across the road. How did you manage to capture that?
Well, we always have deer crossing the road in Beaverkill. We live up in upstate New York. There are deer everywhere you look. And so I think we just wanted to take advantage of that. And we set the camera up in the truck, knowing that we'd see some at night. And we did, right?
Well, kind of. You and I had been practicing soccer in the gym. And we were coming home that night. And we were filming, actually, the snow, because we needed some snow shots of driving. It was of Kurt driving drunk in the snow. And luckily, those deer jumped up over the bank there, and we got three deer in the headlights, and they were super beautiful, and Zelda and I are freaking out because it looked so good. And then we actually changed the story because of that kick-ass footage. Zelda had actually been killed slightly differently, and when we saw those deer, we realized, oh, this is perfect. Now we have a really cool storyline.
Oh yeah. I knew something was going to happen as soon as I saw those deer. I was just like, oh, this can't be good. You know?
No. Yeah.
It reminded me of Get Out.
Oh, cool.
That's what it reminded me of. Yeah.
Huge compliment. Oh, right. Cause they hit the deer in the beginning of the movie. Right.
Yes. So that's how I knew. I was just like, this is not good.
No. Right.
And also, I know we've been talking about the house a lot, but when you're destroying the house, were all those takes the first take? Like, especially the one where you toss the tub out the window, like, how hard was it to get that on the first take?
That was, we have to get it on the first take, because that thing weighed about, you know, 700 pounds. And that's a really, I'm loving your questions, because you're really watching some, you're paying attention to some really important things and some details that were important to us. That was a one take, Charlie. And in fact, it was so heavy when it hit the ground, it shook the whole house. And then in turn, it shook the camera. And so I don't know if you noticed, but as the thing hits, I have to jump at it and go close up. And the reason is because it shook the camera so much, I didn't want to give that away. You know what I mean? I didn't want the audience to be like, oh, I saw the camera get shook. So we had to do a quick jump at it right when it hits the ground because of the power of that thing hitting.
No,
only one take for that.
No, it honestly edited like very smoothly. Like I wouldn't have known. So it's really interesting to hear that, you know, it caused that much of a disturbance with the camera. And now I kind of want to see it shaking.
Yeah, no, it was that thing was a pure American steel right there. That it was so heavy.
And also for the time lapse where your character is sleeping and it's dark and then it like goes to sunrise, how did you guys manage to film that? Like, did you take one shot at night, or was it already morning and then you just like opened curtains? Like, that was really interesting to me. Because it ran so smoothly. I was just like, how?
That's really cool. That was just an editing trick. So we shot in the day, and then we took the exact same edit, put it over each other, and changed the opacity. So that, and then like had to mess with certain sections of each image. So it's basically just editing trick where you make regular footage and you make it look really dark, and then you bring up the opacity so that it goes from dark to light. And I had to fix a couple little things like in some windows so that you didn't see the pure white. But that's how it was done. It was basically done with opacity and taking the same image and putting it over each other.
Now that's really interesting, because I was just like, that ran so smoothly. I wonder how they
I'm
did
so
it.
I'm so glad that you liked it. That took a long time, and we talked a lot about that. Remember when we talked about whether that was cool or not? And so it's really great that you enjoyed that.
No, yeah, like a lot of, I really love how it was the three of you making this film, and that it is an indie film, because a lot of the stuff I was just like, how did they do this?
That's great.
Were there any moments where you had difficulty shooting anything? Like, did something change in the story because something just wasn't working, or?
Well, we film a lot in the winter. I would say like a lot of this film was shot in the winter, and just shooting in the winter is very cold, but it's totally worth it because it's so beautiful. And I feel like it really evokes like a kind of dark mood, and I love that. And it's super cinematic, but your fingers definitely feel like they have frostbite, and it's hard to control the camera, but
yeah. Also in the end, there's a fight scene between Ivy and Kurt that looks really good with the light coming through the windows because there was so much dust in the house. But when you have asthma, it really sucked.
Oh, no.
Which I do. So that was something that in the end was worth it, how it looked it. But that was a tough, I had a tough time after doing that. And it looked really good. You know, dust through light always looks good.
Also, I mean, we make a lot of mistakes. That's the advantage of us being just a crew of three, is that we make a lot of mistakes, either technically or acting or story-wise. But the lucky thing is, we don't have to get the whole crew back together to go back to the station to do it. We're just three of us. We can do it anytime we want. So we do make a lot of mistakes, and we reshoot a lot of things.
No, that's really interesting you say that, too, because since you're a crew of three, how do you like split the roles? Do you guys switch off every other film, or are you guys like pretty set on your specific roles?
It kind of depends on the circumstance. So many times it's just the three of us. So two of us will be on camera, and then the other one is controlling the camera and directing. And I think that we also like to direct ourselves. And if we ever have a disagreement, we just shoot it three different ways, each how we want to, and then in the editing process, see which way works out best.
No, I think that's a really smart move because, every take is not going to be the same, and with three different perspectives, you'll have totally different outcomes. So I think that's really smart of you guys to be doing that.
Really fun to do. I mean, this is our fifth or sixth feature together, and so we've kind of gotten used to taking turns with how we're going to direct a scene, who's behind the camera, everyone acts. We all have opinions when it comes to writing and editing. John does the technical editing, but Zelda and I often give our two cents. And it's kind of a really cool collaboration. We spend a lot of time in the car because Zelda's a soccer player. So we spend a lot of time talking on our way to games and practices, that's kind of, or on hikes, that's sort of our business. Our office is in the car or on a hike, and we just work it out together, and we've kind of learned how to listen well to each other and give each other a chance to perform the way we'd like a scene to perform, and it's a cool dynamic.
I already said it, but I love how you guys as a family were able to create this. Like, I just think it's really awesome because I don't know if I would be able to film anything with my family. Would be like, no, I want it this way.
What's your favorite movie that's come out during COVID?
My favorite movie that's come out during COVID? I don't know.
Oh, I stumped you.
Yeah, you did.
Okay, well then what's your favorite horror movie?
My favorite horror movie is Scream.
Well, okay, good. That's cool, right.
I'm not much of a horror person, but I'm slowly getting into it. So watching your film, I like some of the effects. I think the sink scene with the blood, I had to turn away. I was like, no.
Oh, good.
I cannot. So you guys did really great with the effects and everything. That sounds like I was just like, I can't. I need to take off the headphones. I need to step away really quick.
Yeah, that was pretty
good,
gross.
Good.
Yeah, and your film was, it left me more like, uneasy than scared.
Yeah,
but the one jump scare you guys did get me, I was just like, oh my god. And I was watching it like at night as well, so I was just like, I'm gonna need a moment. Okay, so going back to the tarot cards, what was the learning process like for you guys? Did you all learn how to use them?
I guess I had the most communication with Sasha, our tarot expert. I met with her in person and talked about the cards, and I also enjoyed studying them. I love researching things. And then, really important, and I had to get permission to use that particular deck. And with her help, we were able to, which was really great. Sometimes it's really helpful when you're such a small company, you can get things that you wouldn't be able to get if you weren't, without paying a lot of money, if you were a bigger production. So in this case, they gave us permission, which was wonderful. And so then it was about looking at the actual cards and figuring out which, only a few we wanted to use, would be really cinematic. And of course, the Hanged Man worked perfectly for us visually and symbolically. The Death card, of course. And then a few of the, I think we only used two or three others, and then they would represent each character. That was fun to pick out which one, because the cards look great.
Yeah, I was really interested. I was like, as you said, the cards do reflect the characters very well. So it's really good to know that you were able to kind of like go through the whole deck and be like, this is the one we're going to use, because each card as well, it like ties into the horror theme with the devil and the hangman. It's just like, ooh, you know, yeah. Like what's gonna happen now?
I'm glad you caught that. Yeah. Have you had your cards read, or do you perform tarot?
No, but I'm on the TikTok side of tarot.
Very cool.
So that's how I kind of knew what was going on in the film, and it wasn't like, because yeah, I just get them on like my For You page, and it's just like, oh, interesting. I didn't know that, but I haven't really delved into it. But I was really excited to see that your film dealt with the tarot cards, because I think it's something really interesting that should be talked about more, and hopefully it will be. And I don't think there's a lot of horror films that deal with tarot. It's more of the board. I don't know how to pronounce it.
Ouija board.
Ouija board. They mostly revolve around those, but I think there's a lot of good stuff you can do with tarot as well. Were there any moments that you had while filming that just made you crack up? Like, what was the funniest moment you had while filming?
I thought it was really funny, the scene where, can I say where? Did I give it away?
Oh, no, yeah, no, that's okay.
No,
yeah.
Right in the beginning of the film when he's, what's it called?
Smothering me.
That was so fun. It was like, it was so funny to act like this guy was killing me when he is my father and he would never do that. So it was definitely a fun scene to film. And people are always like, was that scene hard to film? You know, I know it's very violent, but no, it was fun.
It was hard for me as her mom. I did not enjoy it.
Oh.
I had a hard time kind of shuffling off my mother's, you know, love. Even though I knew it served the purpose of the story, I still don't like looking at that. At all the festivals we went to, I had to close my eyes during that scene.
Oh, no. Well, I think, well, now that you say you had a lot of fun filming that scene, like I can just imagine Zelda just like the kicking, it's like her from laughing.
Right, there you know?
Yeah.
So it'll bring a little like light heart moment next time if you watch it again.
Yeah.
What was your film festival journey like?
All right, so we had a really great ride with the festivals. We premiered in Montreal at the Fantasia Film Festival, which was just such a thrill because there's so many iconic films that have been introduced to the world there, and the people who run it are off the charts cool. All the other filmmakers, the people running the festival, and in Montreal, it was just a blast. Then we went on to other really cool festivals like Sitges in Spain, which was wonderful. A whole village on the coast of Spain just gets taken over by the horror and sci-fi genre world. That was a thrill. And then we were in Austin for the Fantastic Fest, another great festival at the Alamo Movie Houses. Scream Fest in LA.
Fest in London.
Yep. And then
Telluride. Which was, you know what? Festivals are a great place for filmmakers to go and learn what you're doing, because you meet the crowds, you get the reviews, you sit in like really nice movie theaters with an audience, and there's nothing like sitting in a movie theater watching your own movie with an audience to teach you what you've done.
Oh, definitely. Do you have any fun memories from any of the film festivals? Like, how were the audience reactions? Did anyone come up to you afterwards?
Well, absolutely. Every single festival has its own slice of magic. They're all magic for different reasons. You always meet terrific people. The the promoters are always wonderful. The people who put these festivals on are film lovers. And so you immediately get along with them because you're all doing the same thing. You're all loving the same thing. The geography of where you're going, like you're going to Telluride, you're going to London, you're going to Paris, you're going to just, it's just fantastic. And it's not just the big festivals that are famous. The tiny, tiny, tiny festivals are sometimes the most magic because you really get to know everyone. You know, it's just a really, if you're out there making movies, the festival circuit is priceless.
And the horror crowd is so nice. They love watching horror and they're so welcoming to our movies and everyone else's movies. And I love that.
Also, there are some festivals that are basically women's film festivals or if you identify as female. And one of those we went to at this time in Berlin was the Final Girls Berlin Film Festival, which is really cool. It's all the female film festivals that our films have been to have been some of my personal favorites because you meet all these incredible women who are going on the same journeys that you're going on. And so you should definitely check those out on your journey. The women's festivals are the best. And often they're one of the festivals who compensate their filmmakers isn't something that you always experience. And in my experience, the women's film festivals really look after their filmmakers.
I love that. I mean, I'm definitely going to look into them and I think I will have a joy. Hopefully we run into each other at one of them. That would be fun.
I hope so.
Is horror your favorite genre to film or do you like diving into other genres?
Our first couple of films were dramas and we definitely, you know, of those we got into some nice films, but then my dad and I wanted to experiment with horror. So we made a kind of, I think it was an hour long horror film and it's basically one long dark poem. It's called The Hatred. And we found out that we love making horror. You can do whatever you want. And then we found out that at festivals, the horror crowd was amazing. So we decided to make an even longer, more detailed horror film called The Deeper You Dig. And we love it. And we're making a new horror film. And, you know, we hope to make more.
Oh, you're working on another one right now?
Yeah, it's called Hellbender. And we're currently in Wyoming, and soon we're going to go film some, like, dream sequence shots that are going to be fun. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, please keep us all updated with that film. I'll be excited to watch.
Thank you.
How long did it take you guys to go through the whole process with The Deeper You Dig?
About a year. From story idea to shooting took about a year and a half because we shot from winter to winter. And then it took about 3 or 4 months to finish the editing. So what we do is we shoot and edit at the same time, but it always, when you're done with the movie, you always got to kind of go back and fix some things. And you always drag a little on the editing because basically what you find is that your first edit's always longer than it should be. And so you have to cut a lot of it out. And that just takes some time to figure out what you need to lose and what's good.
Is it hard for you guys to decide what needs to go? Like, is there something that you wish we would have been able to have seen in the film that we didn't get to?
Yeah, there were some scenes that we had to cut that were painful to cut, that were beautiful. And I love them. And we all love them. But, you know, I think Toby's really good at being economical. I probably would stay on some scenes too long and I probably have more scenes than necessary. And in the end, you always are happy. Like, I'm always happy that Toby's been more economical because when you're in a festival watching a movie, you can tell where you've stayed too long on a shot or something like that. And this last festival run really felt good because I think we were economical and I don't think we ever drag our heels. So
it's taken us a while to get there, though. I mean, I think in our first films, we would fall in love with a shot so much that we would want to keep it just because we loved it. But as we've done more and more, we've really learned to just serve the story. And it's a little easier to get the scissors out and cut things.
Oh, definitely. I'm like, just like, okay, it's got to go. Next. Moving on. The snow looks absolutely beautiful. Did you plan to film on the days that it was snowing? Like, was that planned out, or was it, did it just happen to be snowing while you filmed?
We're quite spontaneous. Since we're all together, it's a lot easier to be like, oh my God, there's a blizzard outside right now. Let's go shoot and take advantage of this. Because you kind of have to do that, or else it'll all melt away and then you lose your opportunity to get an amazing winter shot.
Oh yeah. I wondered, like, were they looking at the weather map? Like, oh, we need to film this day. It's going to snow, you know? But that is also very helpful that you're all together and you're just able to be like, it's snowing. Let's go get the equipment.
Exactly. Yeah,
totally.
Do you have any advice for other aspiring filmmakers?
Yes. Don't worry about money. Just shoot. Too many people throw up obstacles to creating art. So take all the obstacles away and go create it. And if it stinks, that's good, because then the next one is going to be better. And then the next one's going to be better. And the next one's going to be better. That's what we've learned, is do it. All your disadvantages are actually your advantage. If you're one person with no friends, then make a movie about yourself. If you're six people and you're all friends, then now you have a cast of six. And that's your disadvantage and your advantage. And so just, you have to go shoot.
Yeah.
And you'll learn, you know, and that's the thing, is you can't learn from not doing anything. It's like Gretzky says, you know, what is it? You miss 100% of the goals you don't shoot.
Shots you don't take. Yeah.
So you know, we've been to so many festivals and we've watched so many movies, and it's great to see people creating, and we all learn from each other. And these are people that have said, they don't worry about their obstacles, they don't worry about money, and they go and they do it. And we've seen some of the greatest art ever at these festivals with zero budget, even shot on an iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you don't need a lot of fancy equipment. I mean, we don't have any fancy equipment. We have cameras we like. We shoot outdoors a lot because nature gives you the most beautiful light. So I think it would be a shame to not do something because you don't have the newest incredible 4K camera or this kind of light or this kind of lens. Just using what you have. I mean, what's that expression? Necessity is the mother of invention. Mm-hmm. You just use what you got. You need what you got, and you use it. And it's amazing what you can come up with, how creative you can be with so little.
No, definitely. I think I needed to hear that myself as well. Like, just being stuck at home with all the restrictions right now, my friends and I are just like in a creative slump. And yeah, maybe we should just film something on Zoom, or, you know, like just do something.
Oh, yeah.
You must.
Yeah. There we go. I must. I have to do something.
Right.
What's that horror movie? They did it all, like, it's all through the computer. It's Unfriended or something.
Yeah. I haven't seen it. Have you guys seen it?
Now I should.
For our listeners and our viewers, where can we watch the film?
The film is on pretty much all platforms, like Amazon and iTunes. It's on Google Play.
Shudder.
Yeah, now it's streaming on Shudder. And Arrow, it's just come out. Arrow over in the UK now has a subscription service, and they have a channel. It's on Arrow. And you can buy the DVD, too, or the Blu-ray from Arrow. The DVD is in various places like Kmart and Walmart and Target and Barnes & Noble. But pretty much everywhere but Hulu and Netflix.
Okay. I'm going to have to keep an eye out at Target now.
Yeah.
And where can we keep up with you guys and your upcoming work?
So we're at family.films on Instagram, and we're Wonder Wheel Productions on Facebook.
We also have an Instagram account named The Deeper You Dig, just the name of the film on Instagram. So, and
yeah, our website is wonderwheelproductions.com. Everything's accessible there, including our previous films. And music videos that we've made too, with various, band incarnations you can see on our website as well.
I was going to say, do you guys make music as well? Is that something you guys do on the side?
Yeah, actually our band is called Hellbender. So that's also the name of our next movie. And we've got a couple videos up on YouTube, and we're working on a lot of new stuff too that's going into our next movie. So we're having a lot of fun with Hellbender.
The music, you just reminded me of a question. How did you guys choose the song for Echo to keep tuning into?
Well, we were looking for something in the public domain, which is really important. And there's quite a lot out there. And then we loved that song. We thought it was so playful and taunting. And once we realized it was in the public domain, that and two other, the old-timey song, we got friends of ours who are wonderful musicians, James Harrell and Ileana Kadushin, who have a band called Lithion. And we got them to just adapt the songs.
Okay. Yeah, I was like, how did they choose this song? Like, it sounds like very inviting, but once you see what happens, it's just like, oh, don't play that song. You know what I mean?
She's having fun. It's called Ain't We Got Fun, and she's definitely having fun haunting him.
Yeah, for sure. I really love that aspect. I was like, she's just having fun with it. Let her be. But thank you guys so much for joining me today. I had a blast talking to you. I hope our audience is able to watch the film sometime. And yeah, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for inviting us today. That was really fun.
It was. Thank you.
We loved your questions. And good luck with all your work.
Oh, thank you so much. I hope to run into you guys at a film festival. I really do.
Well, we would love
definitely that.
I had an amazing time talking to Toby, John, and Zelda, and I hope you enjoyed listening in. If you're looking for a new horror film, make sure to check out The Deeper You Dig, available on all streaming platforms. That's all for today's podcast. Thank you for listening in. Take it home for us, Adams family.
I'm John Adams.
I'm Zelda Adams.
I'm Toby Poser, here with our film The Deeper You Dig on GeneBookNerd.com.